Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting edition of the Enterprise Dish. Today, we are hanging out with Rick, who is in yet another office. No surprise there. Where are you at today, Rick?
Well, I'm at the Veeam office in Atlanta. It's a brand new facility, just opened a couple weeks ago, and down here to shoot some videos. I was just telling Brad I should have went into our studio and done this call there, because probably for once I could have outperformed in regards to broadcast quality Brad's set up there.
Well, I'm sure you'll be there frequently, especially in Atlanta, which is super easy to get to. That's actually pretty convenient.
Yeah, it works pretty good. The only thing is the office is a good hour north of the airport.
Oh, okay.
I do it for the people here.
Rick is a people person. Actually, I was just trying to think. It's hard to believe it's been about 6 weeks since VeeamON. It does not feel like it was that long ago that we were down in Miami, but yeah.
Oh, wow, yeah, it is. It's over a month now, so yeah.
Yeah, time is flying, but couple quick things before we dive into topic du jour. If you've been holding out for Hyperserver 2019, that is now available after many delays. But what I want to hit on here, Rick, is for the second time in a week, a city in Florida, separate cities, have paid ransoms for ransomware. And this is like several hundreds of thousands of dollars that these companies, or cities, are just forking over to get their data back. And this is, it's befuddling because there's so many different ways you can prevent against this. And it all starts with, the story always starts the same. Somebody clicked an email and a link, and then before they knew it, their whole entire system was gone.
Yeah, so ransomware, you know, is something that's near and dear to my heart. And well, I shouldn't say ransomware, but ransomware resiliency.
Yeah.
And this is something that I ended VeeamON with. We had the big room and the big general session room, we had a session on. And I've been doing a lot of work here at Veeam about it. And I'll be really transparent. I actually thought that the biggest, most effective technique was always something technical, like whatever a backup product can do.
Sure.
But the reality is user education is the most effective technique. So a lot of times people are trying to solve it technically with this, you know, backup product, these storage, these offline medias, those are all good. And I'll get to that in a second. But if you're not investing in user training and administrator training, believe it or not, those are things you should work on, because that's the entry point to a lot of these threats. And then beyond that, we can be resilient in other ways.
So I'm curious, when you say user training, I mean, is it just simple things like we've been hearing for ages, like don't click links in emails, that sort of thing? Or like, what do you hear on that side?
Definitely don't click links on emails. You know, basically any sender or subject or topic that doesn't look, feel, or smell right, you know, that's probably not something that's right. And one of the tips that I have accumulated over the years are around things like running the little test services called like GoFish, getgofish.com, for example. It'll do a simulated malware email and it'll give you a report on who and how many people clicked it so that you know who to
train. Oh, that's helpful.
Yeah. I mean, it's not an actual
threat,
but it's just identifying your risk in that area. That's one little professional tip I could drop out. But I think at the end of the day, and Brad, I don't know if you've ever had ransomware in any of your experience. Luckily, I've not. But every time I go to and do a presentation about this, I ask for a show of hands from like administrators, IT pros. It is shocking how many people raise their hand. Most of the room have had some form of a ransomware situation. Anybody who's had one that really goes good, they always end their story with, and thank goodness I had a backup. And that's where I think I can help the most. And, you know, I'll give everybody a couple of tips. And this is not specific to Veeam. Of course, you can do all of this with Veeam. But here are some very important tips. No matter what product you're using, always implement least privilege. And what I mean by that is reading source data, whether it's Windows servers, Windows desktops, virtual machines, Hyper-V, VMware, whatever permissions you need to read that, have a completely different set of permissions to write the backups on some storage, tape, disk, NAS devices, et cetera. And from there, you've immediately implemented a like a propagation barrier. And then on top of that, make your components use a different account. You can add additional levels of resiliency by making like that target account where your backups are stored. Make that on Linux, for example. It sounds crazy, but yeah. It's a whole different authentication framework, and have multiple copies of your data. At Veeam, we've always advocated this thing called the 3-2-1 rule, mm-hmm. which came about, I think, in the photography practice, mm-hmm. where, you know, the thought of digital camera, it's all on this SD card. Yeah. There was a thought about losing these pictures. The notion of a 3-2-1 rule was born. But the thought is to have three different copies of your data on two different media, with one of which being off-site. Very simple rule that can address nearly any failure scenario, yet it doesn't require any specific technology. So things like the cloud, things like tape, mm-hmm. things like replicated backups off-site. I shouldn't say replicated backups off-site, because that might propagate a problem. But in Veeam, we have this term called a backup copy job, which will build restore points on a different storage system. And the beautiful thing about that is you can read backups taken on, say, a Windows file server, and build an additional set of backups on a Linux file server.
Oh, gotcha. And okay.
Probably the best tip I heard, just came out this week, is the thought about tape. And before I tell you the story, Brad, what's your 2019 opinion on tape?
Ooh, tape's a dicey one, right? There's always going to be, in my opinion, a love-hate relationship with tape, right? It sounds really good in theory. It sounds really good in practice. Like, you put the tape in, gets a whole bunch of data on there, and then you go put it somewhere, and it's going to be safe. And it's going to be safe for a long time in theory. But I think most people at some point in their career have probably been burned by a tape backup that got corrupted or all that. But in the day and age of where an email link can cost you $500,000 in an instant, you know, I would take the risk of a tape going bad rather than an employee clicking a link and killing the company. So I would, I don't want to say, you know, go out and buy new tapes and all that stuff, but its need in this ransomware world is crazy, because if you think about it, Rick, viruses used to just be a thing we dealt with, and it was basically people sitting in their basement or wherever just having fun, be like, oh, I can go wreck some stuff and all that. And now they've turned it into a business. And now there's real motivation behind corrupting all your data. There's like financial incentive, which we've never really seen before. And so it's not going to get better anytime soon. And every time there's a new exploit out there, you just know that there's somebody crafting links or whatever to figure out how to just destroy your environment. And so in that regard, I'm all in on tape, because you have to have something that you can just basically take your laptop, throw it in a dumpster, get a new laptop, and start, you know, relatively fresh again. You have to be able to do that in a quick amount of time. Otherwise, you're paying out big money.
So your perception of tape is actually very similar to mine. I like to say that everyone has a story of how tape has let them down. But the acquisition cost, the portability, and the ability to be offline of tape is actually a very strong set of technical characteristics. Mm-hmm. Additionally, tape's actually very resilient. I've seen examples where I think it was HPE or something. They kind of unwound an LTO tape, took scissors, cut a big chunk out of it, put tape right off your desk, taped it back together, mm-hmm. and then put it back in there, and it had all the data. So the parity inside of the tape is actually really strong. Anyways, all that being said, I heard a tip that I thought was brilliant, because when you first went on the path, you said, keep tape backups for a very long time. That's actually how I grew up doing tape. But mm-hmm. I heard a tip that actually really changed my whole perception. And this organization basically takes their backups, and the first backup goes to a general purpose high-speed disk. That's great, because you're going to have high-speed recovery. Mm-hmm. But what they also do is they take just the first 7 days, the most recent 7 days, mm-hmm. that goes on tape. Because if you had a ransomware situation, you're going to want to restore the most recent backup.
Yep.
So by putting the most recent backups only on disk, you're limiting the amount of tape environment you support and retain, but you also get that offline characteristic.
Yeah.
And then this organization had the long depth of their retention on a deduplication appliance. So I thought that was a brilliant way to kind of balance it. And you could look at VTLs that are backed in the cloud as well as a candidate for some of this type of stuff. But pure removal tape is the single most offline specimen that is likely most resilient. But a couple other tips I can drop out. I don't know. Do you want more tips on this type of stuff?
I think if anybody's listening to this at this point in the conversation, I think the more tips, the better.
Yeah, cool. So a lot of times people put their backups on general purpose storage, usually like the old SAN. I don't know if you've ever seen an organization. Maybe they had like this large enterprise class, but it was rotational storage, but now they went all flash for the data center, right? But they got the rotational SAN that's holding backups now. And usually those types of storage systems support storage snapshots. So a great tip here is whatever the volume is that holds your backups, schedule like a once a week or a once a day storage snapshot and hold it for a little bit of time.
Yep.
So having a storage snapshot of your backup repository is a good little tip. Another tip is around the cloud. And this is one that is an emerging area. I'll be completely transparent. But if you think about, if you have general purpose disk backups, and when I say general purpose disk, those are in Veeam talk, we can put backups on NTFS, ReFS file systems, as well as the, some of the Linux file systems.
Yep.
But I can take those backups and I can put them in a number of different cloud locations. Azure Blob Storage, I can put those in S3, I can put those in IBM Cloud. And the one practical tip, this is a little bit specific to Veeam, is just make sure that number of what do we call it? Operational restore window. Usually the way Veeam looks at it is we have this long backup chain that might be months or years. And if it's older than say a week, we want to put it all in the cloud. My practical tip here is just drop that to zero and it'll very aggressively put it up in the, into the cloud. And then the second tip on that is also think about service providers. Now, everybody, when you say cloud, you think Azure, Amazon, IBM, Google, Oracle, et cetera. But there's a huge network of service providers. And this Veeam's actually taken this very, very seriously over the years. We have invested in a technology called Cloud Connect, which is a backup repository that sits in the sky, a place where you can put your backups. That's a really good resiliency technique, especially if the service provider or an enterprise on their own wants to do this, but there's a technique that we have called insider protection. Now, this is really, really cool in that when we write a backup up there with insider protection enabled, there's a second copy kept completely out of band. So if you had a rogue administrator, go delete everything. If you had ransomware, go delete everything. There's this out of band, completely administrative realm, different copy of the backup data. And then the other tip, that those are a couple tips for like data centers and servers. Different credentials by far is the single most effective technique besides user training, different file system, multiple copies of the data. Those are a few things. And I guess before, what do you think about that before I go into like PC laptop type
tips? Well, the one thing that keeps popping into my mind, it's tangibly related. So in a prior life, I used to do a bunch of IT compliance audits, and they were generally like small to mid-sized credit unions, just kind of around the area, the recent, you know, anywhere from basically Illinois over through basically Virginia, and doing a whole bunch of stuff. And at the end of every audit, you would do a presentation on like a small, like 10 minute presentation on, you know, findings and compliance things. And I always had a slide in there that was told to me by the managing partner of the company. And his words of advice were, you don't get to pick when you have a bad day. And so you gotta be prepared, right? That was always it. You don't get to pick. And if you're not prepared, especially in the financial space, because your data is even more valuable because it's likely PPI compliant or PII and all that good stuff. And so it's this threat of ransomware is getting more pervasive. And we know this. I was telling Rick right before this, I was looking at the traffic on Petri, like what articles are just kind of just doing well. I always do it roughly towards the end of the week. It's like, what's been doing? Ransomware stuff is continuing to trend very high, mostly because everyone's trying to figure out what little edge they can get for when that user clicks a link. And so it's just a very serious and important topic for anybody.
You're right. And one of my, I guess, everybody, when you look at IT and, you know, you got your role models and stuff. My SQL Server role model is a guy by the name of Brent Ozar, and he's a SQL Server master, just, you know, SQL Server all the way.
Yep.
He tweeted the other day, test your backups or they will test you.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And that's exactly where we need to be. So I think that I'll tell you a story. This individual was not a Veeam customer, but I talked to an individual who became infected with ransomware in their business. Mm-hmm. And they actually decided to pay the ransom because their backup, and more specifically their restore process, was so long, cumbersome, and error prone that they had zero confidence in it, and it felt better to just pay the ransom. This is not where we should be in 2019, guys. So I really think that investing in your backup, and even like PCs and laptops, in fact, this computer I'm talking to you on now, I just did my ransomware session at VeeamON, and then more specifically, I just did a session this week on best practices for physical servers and endpoints. And when you think about the endpoints, I'm guilty of it. Everybody has something in my documents they care about. And we're in a situation, though, no matter what policies you have, mobile device management, remote access, all these different things, there's still data locally. I'm guilty of it, and I'm sure others are. So I actually back up this computer. And the joke is, I really don't care if you steal it because or lose it. And that was the joke at VeeamON. That's why I dunked it in the water, the other one, not this one, because I really am very confident in the backup of the endpoints. So much so that one of the techniques, and this is a tip that even for Veeam's free edition, so this is completely free, basically on this computer when I'm connected, I'm traveling right now, but I have a USB drive that sits on my desk and I do the backup. After it does the backup, this is brilliant. It ejects the media, so it's offline.
Oh, yeah.
So that if something happened while I'm working on this during the day, my backup is not connected to the system, so it can't be propagated. Now, the only tip that I have to bring it back online is I reboot and bring that back up so it'll reattach. But that's available in the free edition of Veeam Backup for Windows, or Veeam Agent for Windows. Sorry. Yeah. It's got the name messed up. But the endpoints are important too. And I think you have to look at them both completely separate, because they have different characteristics, endpoints, server, data center, et cetera. But the reality is, this is not just a PC problem. Our tech support team deals with ransomware calls every day.
Sure.
And even things that go in and encrypt databases, there's some that are aware of Veeam backup file formats and encrypt and delete those. It's real. It's a real threat. And everything from education, prevention, and resiliency with backup, that kind of progression is where IT pros need to invest, I think, pretty significantly to be resilient today.
Yeah, it's a serious threat. And it's, I know everyone is always afraid of getting hacked, right? That's kind of a big one out there, right? You know, usernames and all that stuff sold or stolen. But the incredible threat of being out of business tomorrow is ransomware. Because if you come in and your whole system's locked up and you can't do anything, you're hosed. That is a bigger threat, in my opinion, than just the basic getting hacked and having your data stolen. It's so much worse than that. And so,
and then, one other thing I'll think about is, if you've, you know, gone through this journey and maybe you're not complete and you have a ransomware situation, here's a practical tip that can help you in the moment.
Yep.
Believe it or not, call for support to maybe your backup vendor, because it's very important that you don't introduce the propagation to your backups.
Sure. Oh, exactly.
So our support team has actually restructured their process so that they walk through a very safe kind of isolation progression of what you would do in a restore situation. You know, little things like maybe just a file only restore, right? You don't want to reintroduce the ransomware. Other situations include, Veeam has this new technique called secure restore, which is, we'll do a whole image based recovery, but we're going to do an antivirus scan aware of the latest threats before we do it, right?
Gotcha.
So call your support team for your backup product. And actually, I'll go one step further. If your support offering for your backup product can't really help you isolate and go down a safe path for ransomware, you probably don't have the right backup product.
Yeah.
I do know that Veeam's restructured their support around this. So call for help, because you don't want to do this in an island.
Yeah, I fully agree. And, you know, if you're not having any issues today, that means it's time to act, because you're only one. I mean, look at the city of Florida. Like, nobody would probably go out of their way to attack potentially that city. But what they do is they just blanket attack everything they can get their hands on, and hopefully somebody clicks. So even if you're thinking, oh, I'm just a small, we only do $3 million a year in revenue, where they're not under it. Yeah, you are. Because yeah. You're not specifically targeted. You're just under that blanket of, oh, we've got an email address for your company. Let's see if we can get someone to click that link.
Yeah, the risk is real. I don't know if I've had any of those come in, but I delete plenty of suspicious stuff,
yep.
Right?
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. On the little bit happier side and less serious side of life, Mr. Rick, you are in Atlanta. What is going on in your life as we wrap it up at the back of the book here? Anything happening, traveling? Well, yeah. We're hitting the summer barbecue season.
Yeah, you know, I got a new grill.
There we go. Let's talk grilling.
And that thing is amazing. I made my first, I guess, large project was last week. I did some chicken wings. Mm-hmm. I love chicken wings on the grill. And, of course, like burgers and steaks. And I did like fajita steak, the arrachera, yeah. The real thin stuff. So it's like really good, high technical stuff. I really like that grill. But no, a little bit of travel. Well, I have this trip today. This is a one-day trip. But I've been home for 4 weeks. That's very rare. So I had 4 weeks straight gone between Amsterdam, Vimon, Miami, Chicago,
yep.
Amazon Summit, and then Sweden and Czech Republic. And then home for 4 weeks, and then a little one-day to Atlanta. Yep. And then after the 4th of July, I head over to Spain and then Dallas and then vacation. And then San Diego. So I got four in a row in July. So July is going to be a little rough.
Yeah, that's a little out there. I'm on the hunt for the perfect technique. So I like to grill, as many people do. For some reason, somebody got me infatuated with putting Parmesan on a corn cob. I don't know. Like, so you grill corn on the cob, and just like normal. And then you put just not like powdered Parmesan, but like shaved Parmesan. If you can get it right. It's fantastic. The problem is it's really hard to do, and I haven't figured out the proper technique yet. So if anybody figures this out, let me know. But the best thing I've figured out so far is you shave it really, really thin, and then right before you take it off the grill, you just lay it on top like a blanket, and it kind of just melts down. I'm sure this is terrible for me. But anyways, it just kind of melts down, and it's just enough that it is amazing. But
well, that sounds great. I think if you get it right, it could even make like a little – like a creamy crust situation, almost better than butter. And it actually brings a really good salt to it, by the way. A lot of people say don't add salt, add Parmesan cheese, because it actually brings that salty flavor. So
the challenge, though, is that typically, like, it's tough because depending on how you do the corn on the grill, like, sometimes if you can have it elevated, but typically we put, like, a layer of aluminum foil down. And the problem is if that Parmesan cheese touches the aluminum foil, like, it peels off. So it is a fine work of art on the timing of when to apply the Parmesan to get it just right, so where you don't burn it and ruin the corn, to where it doesn't stick on the aluminum, to where it's perfect. And I'm refining the technique as we go along each summer.
So here's an idea for the grill. Just popped to me. It'd be a lot of work, but if you really like it, is, you know, those chicken rotisserie roasters, you could maybe do that, you know, so it doesn't touch anything.
Yeah,
and especially if you have a really hot, like an infrared burner, you could like instantly crust it up. I don't know. Yeah. I'll have to. No, great, I've got something to do this weekend. Thanks.
Yeah. It's a friend in the neighborhood got me on it because he was struggling with. He's like, you know how to do this? I'm like, no, I don't. But like, then I tried just a little bit. I'm like, oh man, like that with like a nice piece of chicken or a burger or what? It's perfect summer corn.
Even if you mess it up, it's still amazing.
Even if you mess it up, basically all I end up doing is just shave the corn off and just kind of like make a little medley of Parmesan cheese and corn, and it's fantastic. It is fantastic.
Amazing. Cool.
It's great, Rick. Well, we very much appreciate you taking time out of your busy Atlanta and travel morning to talk ransomware, the serious things that are going on, and how people can be prepared. We'll drop some links down below, everybody, for more information on how to either get in contact with Rick, learn more about ransomware and all the protections out there. To everybody else tuning in, thanks for hanging out, and we'll catch you right back here next time.